What's lurking around the corner?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. The dark shadow of inflation is beginning to grow. This morning, the Labor Department said prices at the retail level climbed 0.8% last month. That's double what was expected. It means that in the past year, the cost of living has increased 5.5%. Inflation hasn't seen that kind of jump since 1991. One place where prices haven't been rising as much is Walmart. Walmart's been relying on volume, and it seems to be working. The company reported a 17% increase in profits this morning. But Walmart does have some problems. There was a Wall Street Journal story a couple weeks ago that said Walmart managers met and talked about the danger of a Democrat in the White House. They said it would lead to more unionization. Now, several labor groups want the government to investigate what Walmart might be doing about this. Lisa Roth explains.
Federal election law says it's illegal for employers to tell hourly workers how to vote. The complaint, which is being filed with the Federal Election Commission today, says Walmart violated that rule by holding meetings at which it effectively told workers not to vote for Barack Obama. The AFL-CIO and the labor-backed WakeUpWalmart.com are among the groups asking for the investigation. Stacey Locke Temple is with Walmart Watch, another advocacy group, which wrote a similar letter to the commission last week.
The ramifications are far-reaching because Walmart is the largest employer in the nation with 1.4 million employees. Walmart has a long history of union busting, and it also has a very long history of intimidating its employees.
Walmart didn't return calls before my deadline today, but a spokesman told the Wall Street Journal the company's glad the commission will look into this because we're confident they'll find we did nothing wrong. In New York, I'm Alisa Roth for Marketplace.
Wall Street is on the slide for the third straight day. Those inflation numbers I mentioned are raising questions about whether the Fed will raise interest rates. So far, the Dow is down 76 points to 11,456. The NASDAQ is down 2, and the S&P 500 is off by 7 so far. The markets in Asia finished mixed. Shares in Europe are mostly lower so far. People in Europe are starting to feel just as squeezed as Americans. Today, the EU said the economies of Germany, France, Italy, Spain all shriveled up in the second quarter. And in Britain, the pound continues to lose ground to the dollar. Our European correspondent Stephen Beard joins us now. Stephen, is this simply a case of European countries finally catching up with the U.S. slowdown?
Yes, I think that is the case. I mean, it's all the same factors. Consumer spending slowing down as consumers have to deal with higher fuel and food prices, and also the problem of falling home prices. But Britain, you know, is more vulnerable than the US in this situation. Home prices rose much higher here than in the US, mm-hmm. and the Brits have taken on a lot more debt than Americans.
One thing that comes to mind here is interest rates, because the Federal Reserve cut interest rates for months and months and months, while the Bank of England and the European Central Bank left them alone.
That's right.
Is this coming back to haunt them?
Yes, I think to an extent it is. I mean, the big concern, particularly in Britain, has been inflation. The British economy is always much more prone to inflation, and particularly imported inflation, than the US economy. But there's no doubt now that as the downturn gathers pace, these relatively high interest rates in Britain and the Eurozone are going to have to come down, because at these levels, they are making the problem worse.
So, Stephen, give me a recommendation here. Is it time for me to start planning a European vacation?
Well, one thing, you're certainly going to see far fewer Brits shopping until they drop in New York this Christmas. But yes, it does look as if a variety of factors coming together are building up the strength of the dollar. So, yeah, we may see you in this neck of the woods in the not too distant future.
All right, Stephen Beard in London. Thank you.
Okay, Scott.
This is the Morning Report for Thursday, August 14th on Marketplace.org. I don't want to beat you over the head with more bad housing numbers, so I'll be quick about it. A survey out this morning from RealtyTrack says foreclosures are up 50% over last year. But are they really? Steve Henn has more.
RealtyTrack may be the most widely cited source of foreclosure data in the country. The company tries to capture every public foreclosure filing. Its numbers drive public policy debates and are quoted from the Wall Street Journal to CNBC. But many industry insiders question the company's figures. For years now, RealtyTrack has reported that Colorado has one of the higher foreclosure rates in the country. But
Colorado's not experiencing any general crashes in housing values.
Ryan McMakin at the state's Department of Housing says different states have different legal systems and generate different records. That makes an apples-to-apples comparison tough. And recently, legal changes in New York, California, and Massachusetts have made tallies there harder. The laws slow down foreclosure proceedings, but thousands of homeowners are still behind on their mortgage payments, even if they don't show up in this month's RealtyTrack. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Not many, if any of those people, live in New York's Upper East Side. It was recently named the most privileged area in the country. But even there, there are concerns about the economy. Philip Martin has this report from Caviar Country.
Walking with Melissa Morris around her exclusive Carnegie Hills Upper East Side neighborhood, you would never know that the country's being hammered by a major economic crisis.
There's a lot of little fashion boutiques for women. There's a lot of upscale children's clothing boutiques. There are fancy sort of dog grooming salons.
28-year-old Morris, whose popular blog might best be described as the lifestyle of the rich and preppy, lives here with her multimillionaire husband Chappie and a miniature Italian greyhound named Monty. If the good life is predicated on opportunities and choices, then the Upper East Side of New York is a showcase of privilege.
The sidewalks are very clean. They're kept clean largely by the doormen, who will be out there sweeping if there's trash strewn about.
Jose Bermudez has been opening doors at Melissa's high-rise apartment building for over 15 years. He says it's no mystery why folks here don't seem nearly as stressed as New Yorkers just a few subway stops away in Spanish Harlem.
People are very relaxed and down-to-earth. I guess it's the lifestyle.
But Melissa says she's starting to see that the economic downturn is chipping away at that lifestyle. On our walking tour, she points to some local businesses that have gone under.
This one just recently closed. It was a clothing store, and I guess it's becoming a different clothing store, but it's becoming a chain now, and it was an individually owned boutique.
There's another for lease sign across the street. Recent headlines suggest why. Massive layoffs in the financial services industry and the end of some million-dollar bonuses. The result, according to the research firm Unity Marketing, was a 20% decline in spending on luxury goods in this year's second quarter. Because even here on the Upper East Side, not everyone needs a $6,000 dress. From New York, I'm Philip Martin for Marketplace.
I don't know how much politicians are feeling economically squeezed, but here's one way to get the money flowing. Get a slot on Comedy Central's Colbert Report. Jim Webb did that a couple years ago, and it helped him get a Senate seat in Virginia.
I came here, I spent 6 minutes with you, and my whole life changed.
That, sir, is called the Colbert Bump.
Actually, we did a little research on the Colbert Bump, and our man Rico Galliano found this.
Last year, Stephen Colbert fan James Fowler attended a bachelor party in Vegas and found himself thinking about one thing.
All this bluster on the Colbert Report, I wonder if he really does have the impact that his character says he has.
Told you he's a fan. He's also a poli-sci professor at UC San Diego. So he downloaded campaign contribution data from the federal government and discovered something surprising.
For Democrats, they get about 44% more in donations in the first 30 days after appearing on the show.
That's compared to similar candidates who don't appear on the show. Republican guests get no increase. It seems to prove the show's power among Democratic voters. Fowler says it also has him thinking about politics and media.
Now, comedy shows have become sources for news about the candidates, and it seems like regular news now has become much more entertainment-oriented.
You mean like business radio programs doing stories about the Colbert Report?
Maybe so.
In Los Angeles, I'm Rico Galliano for the Marketplace Morning Report.
We'll be right back. For people who have gone to see the Olympics in person, rest assured they brought a lot of cash. Seats to most Olympic events are expensive, and good ones are hard to come by. So people are getting creative. Scott Tong reports from Beijing.
Meet Rob Newman.
And I'm from Los Angeles, California, and my shirt says, "Good person, me, needs Olympic tickets, talk to me."
As soon as he landed in Beijing, he started scoring in a way he's never done before. And Newman has been crashing the Olympics since 1972. He thinks it's a relative buyer's market here. Beijing's security restrictions may have scared off a lot of potential spectators. His biggest coup?
While I was there, this Dutch couple walked by and said, "I have a ticket for tonight's basketball game." I knew the black market for that was $2,000 to $3,000. It's like, "How much?" "Here's $100. I go, no, we only want $50. And then I buy the ticket and they go, "By the way, do you know who's playing the game tonight?" I'm like, yes, the U.S. and China. I mean, it was the hottest ticket of all.
Now, Newman's the hot ticket. Local Chinese consider him a novelty and they swarm him.
"Do you have any tickets for me?" "Oh, you want to take a picture with me too?" Yeah.
Newman roams the Olympic grounds, wheeling and dealing anything for good seats.
Tomorrow, though, I just offered to trade my home in Thailand on Craigslist, and I just got an email from somebody saying I've got finals for the swimming tomorrow. So it's like, oh my God, I'm going to have to do that.
In fact, his t-shirt marketing campaign's gone so well, he's now turning down offers.
"No, we don't need judo, you know. It's like, okay, wait, we don't need this. No way. I've got a tennis ticket in my pocket that I bought."
And on and on. In Beijing, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
So far, the focus of the Olympics has been on swimming. But tomorrow it turns to track and field. China has a great chance for gold with hurdler Li Yuzheng. He's pretty much a superstar in China, and he's giving advertisers a case of the Wheaties. Jamila Trindle explains.
Li Yuzheng will be wearing the uniform of the Chinese Olympic team in the 110-meter hurdles on Monday. But in his TV commercials and billboards, he represents everything from milk to shipping companies, not to mention Nike, Coke, and Visa.
In China, you know, celebrities still sell.
Chinese consumers associate Liu with 20 different brands, says Greg Paul, who runs market research firm R3.
Unlike perhaps in other markets, connection with a celebrity can make a huge difference on our brand impact.
Paul has been tracking the use of celebrities in Chinese advertising, and he says it doesn't much matter whether the rest of the world knows Li Yuzheng or not.
8 of the top 10 stars are still local. Apart from Beckham and Kobe, Kobe Bryant, everybody else is a local star in China. So being locally relevant really matters. And Lu Xiang and Yao Ming are by far the most dominant two stars.
Around Beijing, it's hard to go anywhere without seeing Liu's face. In the Beijing subway, people immediately recognize him on billboards.
Liu Xiang.
All that recognition could eventually mean overexposure. And Paul says overly high expectations.
Well, the danger for him is he comes second. So he's got to win, and he's got to win big. So there's going to be more pressure on him than any other athlete for this Olympics.
Some sponsors are even promising bonuses if he wins gold. The only ones watching him more carefully may be his fans, like Ho Ting Guan.
"I think he can get the gold. Two of his rivals are injured and won't be able to compete in this year's Olympics."
But Ho says even if Liu doesn't win, he'll still support him. In Beijing, I'm Jamila Trindle for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.